Hello everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and today's show is an interview and the presentation Steve Lee gave on accessibility at OgCamp 11. That's correct, over 1.5 years ago. I'm not even going to bother to attempt to apologise for the delay in getting this show out. Without further ado, I give you Steve Lee.
Hello everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and welcome to the OgCamp 11 again, OgCamp 11. I'm here with Steve Lee down in the basement. Steve, you're going to be giving a talk today.
Yes, I am, yeah, straight after lunch, so I'm hoping everyone will be a bit dozy.
But yeah, hopefully the coffee will have kicked in.
Maybe, yeah. Oh yeah, I might be awake by then.
So what's your talk about?
It's going to be about open accessibility. So it's an area I've been interested in a long time. I guess my main interest is the benefits of open development that they can bring to users, specifically for people with disabilities, and allowing them to access technology in innovative ways which suit them. But there's actually a much broader picture than that, in that the making sure that technology is available for as wide a number of people as possible means that we can all personalise this stuff for the way we want, which is something someone was talking about, I noticed yesterday. They want the system. There was a discussion about Unity versus GNOME 3, a typical one, but people in different camps, but it boils down to people want to use the system in the way that they want, and accessibility, if you take it in its broadest meaning,
definition,
it allows you to do that.
Are you, when people say accessibility, it's such a broad range. What sort of areas are you focusing in on, or is it just accessibility in
general? I'm going to give a brief overview of what accessibility means, some of the options that are available in operating systems, particularly I'll be showing Ubuntu, because the audience here will be happier with that, but I use it as well. And then looking at some of what's called assistive technology, which is more technology which adapts interface in a more extreme way. The typical example is a screen reader, where someone's completely blind, they can move around with a keyboard, and what's visually available on the screen, which they can't see, is turned to text so they can understand it. And I'll be showing some demos of some of the great open source stuff that's around.
I know a lot of people listening to the Hacker Public Radio Network will know that we've had some shows on accessibility in the past, and Ubuntu has had some criticism about the move to Unity and how accessibility was seen as a secondary issue. Do you hope to address that?
I wasn't intending to. I was probably going to gloss over that because it was only limited time. But yes, you're quite right. If you look at the history of when I first got involved in open accessibility, there were two communities heavily involved with it: GNOME, who were really doing a lot of work to make sure that the GNOME desktop was fully accessible, and Mozilla, who were making sure that the browser, because when you think about web, there's a whole stack, and I'll be covering that, but everything needs to be accessible, all of the bits.
Absolutely.
They all need to work together. So GNOME 2 had a lot of effort put into it. And when Unity came out, some of the stuff got moved around, the accessibility stuff got dropped out. So I think it will come back in. I hope it will. The accessibility team in GNOME have changed. KDE was the other alternative. They were starting to pick up on some of the technology. Now some of the mobile platforms are looking at it as well. So I'm hoping it will improve. But I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I know. I definitely see it as a winning point, as a sales point for the free and open desktop. If we can get that together, then by default, it's a requirement for the other operating systems. So if we clean up our house, by extension, the other houses are going to have to clean up as well. So it's only a good thing. So have you had a chance to see any of the other talks here?
Yes, what did I say? I was very interested in Karen's one, who's actually now the CEO of GNOME, which I didn't realise. I'm a bit out of touch at the moment. I knew Stormy quite well. And that was really interesting because it is a bit, you were saying earlier, it's nice to have something a bit left field. And her talk, completely left field, she's talking about very open, saying I've got a pacemaker and I want to know what software is running on it. Talk to her consultant, can you tell me? Ooh, I don't know, went to manufacturer, couldn't tell you that. And that's worrying. And that brought in a lot of issues about your right to know, and a very personal note as well. And it's slightly accessibility, I think, as well, using technology to improve lives. So that really interested me.
Okay, I'm not going to delve too far into your talk because it'll be on. It'll probably be on this network anyway. But Steve, thanks very much, and hope you have a good talk today.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
No, cheers. Okay, that's good.
And now on the main stage, we have Steve Lee from Oak Directive, who's worked at Mozilla and done some stuff with GNOME. Have you as well?
No, the community side.
Yeah, and he's going to be talking about accessibility in open source.
Thank you. Right. Hi, everyone. That's good to see so many of you here. Right. Yeah, so I'm with Open Directory. We're a new company. We've just set up myself and Ross Gardner, who is with OSWatch, the Higher Education Advisory Service of Open Source. My specific interest is open accessibility and has been for some years now. Just do a straw poll. I mean, does anyone want to put their hand up and say what they think accessibility means? Oh, I'm sure he's done one. Maybe you're digesting your lunch.
Being able to access.
Yeah, okay. That's a good one. Yeah, people generally think of it in terms of giving access to people with disabilities. And that's an important issue. There's legal and moral reasons that you shouldn't exclude people. I'm going to take a slightly broader view than that, though that's a very important part of it. What I'm going to say is accessibility really is making sure that technology is useful by more people in more situations. In other words, if you develop some code, are any of you developers here? Any hands? There's a few. And the rest of you, I guess, are sort of users type, is that right? Okay. So if you develop some software, you obviously want as many people to use it, and certainly in open source, you want as many people to be users because the users then can become contributors. So the important point is when you're designing some technology or some software, as we think about that, is to put the users first. Think about the users, not the technology. And what that actually means is you may hear terms like universal design, inclusive design, and user-centered design. That means you're thinking about what the user is going to do, how they're going to interact with your software, rather than the bling, which is more fun usually technically. And as I said, normally accessibility is considered specifically for people with disabilities. Now the reason I've got disabilities in brackets is the disabilities are really a result of how people react to them, i.e. how you design a software which excludes somebody. That makes them disabled, not the fact that they may not be able to see very well or hear very well. The other issue is that most of us are aging. There are age-related issues. I'm aging, I don't know about the rest of you. And certainly I'm beginning to find now my eyesight's not as good as it was. And we're demographically, we live longer. There's also, at the other extreme, because there's younger children are using technology as well, and the way they interact with it is different. And there's also, a lot of people have got a situational disability. That's becoming more known now because of mobile technology. But for example, you might be in a noisy environment, or you might be in a very bright, sunlit environment. So that effectively causes the way that you interact with something. You need to change the way that you react to interact with something. In general, there are four areas of access that you need to think about when thinking about how people interact with technology. There's hearing. Now, the most computer technology is visually oriented, so if you have a hearing impairment, that is not such a big issue. If you're sight impaired, the same reason means you have a big problem. And then the other side of that's how you perceive the information that, say, technology is giving you. The other is how you interact with it. And some people will have, say, physical disabilities. As you get older, there's arthritis, but there are people who have very limited movement capabilities. And finally, there's cognitive, which is basically how you process information. If you find a lot of people say with learning difficulties will find it quite hard. If there's lots of stuff going on the screen at once, if there's stuff flashing around, that just causes an overload. And interestingly, if you look at the list there, it's pretty much in descending order of how well people are supported by technology. So people with hearing difficulties that have a huge problem, but people with cognitive difficulties often are underserved, if you like, by the work that's going on. The other issue about the people is the context you're in, and one of those contexts is the actual person, you yourself. How you interact with the software is important. And interestingly, some people are looking at the patterns of how people use a mouse, to identify who they are so they can do context IPs, people away, personalised advertising. So the user is the context itself, but there's also the environment you're in. If you're in a car, you can't interact in the same ways that you would do in this is nearly desktop. And there's the actual device itself. There's a little tiny screen, a little phone, not a smartphone, so that's quite different to the big desktop environment. So because mobile is really bringing a lot of this stuff to focus, whereas accessibility a few years ago, it was purely we think about people with disabilities, it's now becoming some of the issues that you need to think about when designing something to be accessible to as many people as possible are also coming up with mobile design. For example, the form factors vary. If the text is really small, it's hard to read. If the targets for you to touch are tiny, it's really hard for you to do it. Certainly, you've got fat fingers like mine. Also, as I keep saying, you use it in different environments, and you move around with your mobile device into a noisy pub, into bright sunlight. And also, new ways of interacting are coming out. So now people are quite familiar with touchscreen. Whereas before, I worked on a project where a touchscreen monitor was used for people actually with dementia to give a nice, simple, big button touchscreen interface. But now we're all getting used to that, and there's a lot of design knowledge coming into how to design interaction patterns that use touch. So I'm going to just show you some examples now of some of the features that desktops have. I'm running Ubuntu here. But all of the operating systems have these. And the simplest features are those little tweaks that you can make. So, with any luck, so if we look, I've turned on this icon up here. You don't get this on by default, but there's some little options that are in here. Like, for example, an obvious one is make the text larger, and immediately, supposedly, the text has got bigger. And another one. Press your keyboard shortcuts one at a time. Now to bring up the system menu on here, I'll press the Alt and the space together, and up comes the system window manager menu, talking to Windows terminology, aren't I? But if I press that one, I can, and if you've got, you can't press two more than one key at once, I can now press the Alt, followed by the space, and it happens. So these little adaptations, a lot of them in all operating systems, and you might not even think of them as actually as an accessibility option. For example, if I go into the system settings and we look at, oh, it's funny because the screen's small, isn't it? There we go. So we go into the mouse settings. The very first one is left-handed, right-handed. So is that an accessibility option? Well, you could say it, I bet.
How did you turn the icon on? The indicator.
I think, pretty sure it's, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there which isn't on by default. I can't get used to these new scroll bars. Has anyone actually used them? I thought I'd turn on the option to make mistakes. Yeah, this is an accessibility issue, obviously. It was, I think it's in this one. I think it's that one. That actually enables a whole chunk of technology underneath, which I'm going to cover in a minute. But I think that brought that on as well. I'll find out if not. Okay. But yes, it's being left-handed a disability. Well, some people might say it is. My wife would be annoyed if I told her she was. But the point is, it's an adjustment made if you want to use the mouse in your left hand. You want the buttons to swap around. Okay, so that's some very basic, and themes. Most people are aware of themes. There are high contrast themes, which have a big difference between the text and the background for people who have difficulty seeing. So that there, oh, if I can get rid of that. Hello, I'm now stuck with it. It's not fitting on the screen, is it? Oh, I did press it. I didn't even realise I clicked on it. Use that option there, dear. Right, let's just turn it off before I get even more confused. Oops, right. So yeah, there's some really basic options. So that's just good. And another thing, you notice I'm using the keyboard. A lot of people like to use the keyboard, but if something's been designed just for mouse access, then that's a problem. Right, I've got the wrong one up there, I think. Is it closed yet? Oh, no, there it is. Right. Okay. So what? There's another thing here, personalization. I noticed that in the panel section that we had before, there was a bit of a debate about, I want Unity, I want GNOME 2 or GNOME 3. People want their own options, and you all, I guess, set up your desktop. I mean, some people don't, they just use the Vanilla as it's come, but we all tend to set up things that work best for us. So there's this concept of personalization, and all these things I've just shown you are really, you could say they're personalization. It's just that, rather than this, I prefer pink to green, it's, well, I can't actually use a computer, the text is too small, because I can't read anything, or I'm left-handed, I'm going mad using the buttons around the wrong way. So what's important is the user interface is configurable, and what's even more important is you want it to be configurable on all of the devices that you use, and what would be even better, and I'll show you something that's hoping to do this eventually, is that your settings would follow you around from your iPad to your Ubuntu desktop to your television, that they would move around with you. Now, assistive technology, have any of you heard that term before? Yeah, okay. Well, in actual fact, I mean, a wear is assistive technology. It's technology that lets you do something. In medical terms, it covers everything from grab rails to help you get into the bath to highly complicated electronic technology. What I'm talking about here is, whereas the stuff I just show you is sort of just tweaking the user interface, some people, in some situations, you want something more complicated. And that actually adapts the user interface into a different way of working. So a very common case, which people are now becoming aware of, is text-to-speech, where the speech is spoken out for you, and voice recognition. That's becoming almost mainstream now. Most systems have some sort of, and mobiles do, certainly, sort of Google Maps. I can speak the destination and a lot of stuff on Android. For blind people, it's quite an extreme case because they can't see anything. There's people who are completely blind, have no vision. There's something called a screen reader, which allows them to navigate around the contents of the screen, and it converts it into speech and reads it to them. That's an assistive technology. For people with really severe physical disabilities, there's on-screen keyboards. Now, you're all probably used to on-screen keyboards now for having a smartphone or a touch interface, but traditionally, they've been used before for people with physical disabilities, particularly those who are very limited in their motion, and all they can actually do is just twitch a bit. So I'm going to switch here. You might be able to do that. Stephen Hawking is a good example. Now he's got a switch, it's operated by twitching his cheek. So you need something that converts that single action into the ability to type. And an on-screen keyboard would do that, and I'll show you an example in a minute about how that works. It's very tedious and slow. So let's show you some examples of that now. So the first one, and probably the one that because the blind community, for a long time, there's a lot of them, and they're very vocal, and they lobby hard, and so they get a lot of attention. And so a lot of the initial accessibility work was for screen readers, for people who are actually blind. And one of the interesting things about that is it's one of the harder problems. It exercises a lot of the requirements that we had. Now, the GNOME project, have an accessibility group, and they created the Orca screen reader. And I'll show you that. I think it is built in, I think. I don't think I have to get this out of repositories.
Certainly used. When Orca screen reader / magnifier frame, preferences button.
Okay, so a blind person would typically navigate around the screen using the keyboard. So I'll.
Quit button.
Oops, wrong one. Tab.
Tab. About button.
Exactly. There we go. So if you notice, it's telling me what key I pressed, if I press tab again, and then what it's landed on. It's not necessarily that clear, but can you see the focus rectangle around bounce at the moment? So that's the object that has focus.
Tab. Help button.
Okay, so if tab. I just go back to preferences.
Preferences for return. Starting or Orca preferences. Tab. Speech page.
Right, and then you
tab,
just
tab, 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 tab.
So at the moment we've got
person, English M combo box. Lancashire M English underscore English and English as M English underscore double return window. Speech page the Orca preferences. Speech page person. English
underscore
default combo box.
It starts to get confusing because as you're moving around it's still like saying stuff is slow and it serializes everything, whereas you look at everything in random access, the text gets serialized, so it can. You do find that blind users use it incredibly fast, and they like synthetic voices because you can go really fast. But I'm going to just cheat now and just apply that.
Apply button. Orca user settings reloaded. Orca preferences.
No slight difference, there's a slight brummy accent there. The other thing that Orca has is a magnifier.
Okay, button.
Now I can't see where I'm
going. Lift tab. Stage page.
Right, now I can move. So it's on the top now. So you get, it's hard enough to get
into the page, vehicle page, magnifier page, enable magnifier tick box, not tick.
Maybe we shouldn't have that voice.
Space, tick.
Right. Now, as I tap around.
Tap. So tap. Position.
It's moving the magnifier version around. So someone with very low vision, this is quite useful. Now, I've got to try
lift
this.
Scale here. Factor. Enable magnifier space, not tick.
Right. So there you go. But a lot of people need to use this technology in order to interact with computers.
Right, I'm actually
going to... Orca screen reader, complete Orca.
Let's
get to it.
Have any of you seen Dasher? Right, okay. Now Dasher is a good... It's one of the reasons I'm interested in open accessibility is the chances of innovation. Dasher's been around a long time. It's an alternative way of entering text. And you actually just need two gestures, really, up and down. And the idea is you steer your way through some letters to try some text. So we'll show you. If you haven't seen it, you'll probably be freaked out by this. But let's just bring it up. Okay, so can you see there's a bunch of letters down the left? And that will change as I move through it. And as I move through a particular letter, it will appear in the text field at the top. So I'm going to do this very slowly. And so I click to start. One move slowly, so I'll go for H. I can move left and right, just to change the speed. And you notice it's got prediction, so it's guessing. I've got a really easy path here. And because of the word prediction, otherwise it whoops. And there we go. Something you always have to say. There you go. That's weird, isn't it? But the point is, you can actually steer. I saw someone make a game out of this. Where they had a switch that went round you, and if you breathed in, that was up, if you like, and if you breathed out, it was down. So you can actually type text just by controlling your ribcage. So. But this is a program, there's lots of versions, there's another version that you can control with just your eyes. So that's an open source project, it's always been an open source project, and there's no proprietary equivalent of that. There you go, let's get out of that one. Another one, which is good fun, EviaCam. And for people with physical disabilities who can't use a mouse or keyboard, this is very useful. I don't know if this will easily work. So this is a head tracker. So it picks up the camera. What I'm going to do, fix that. Right, so I'm going to move my head left to right a couple of times. Oh, doesn't like, it's too dark for it or something, it's not.
That's controversial in itself.
Hey?
Remember the controversy of the HP webcam that couldn't detect non-white people.
Oh, right, okay.
Is that the same problem?
I'm not going to work, it's just the lighting conditions. Right, it's really not going to work now because it hasn't. This one wasn't in the process, I had to build this one. Right? So it's not going to work really well. You can see the pointer's now moving around. And then if I want to run something like the help. There's calibration. Right, you notice I didn't click, I just welt. There's something called dwell click, which is one of the options I showed at the beginning as well, actually. If you can't click, if you pause, then it does a click for you automatically, so that falls out for help. But I'm going to get out of here. That's fine. Right. There's a load of options at the top. You can dwell on those buttons and change the visitor left click, visitor right click. He's fighting the two, yeah. Must be an easy one. Let's go to the bigger button. Oh, escape. I thought. No.
Finishing up the screen.
Oh, yeah, might be a good idea. There we go. Let me try and do this live. It has got. It has got lots of nice options. No, it's still there. Okay. And one more block. This is quite an old creaky GNOME program, the going on-screen keyboard. There's a version on board that comes with this. But the point of this one is, again, it's for people who just use these switch devices. And it has a mode called scanning. And the idea is that things are automatically selected. There's various ways this can be done. And when it's at the right point, you activate the switch. So, now I'm not actually going to use it with a switch, I've got it set up to use the left and right mouse buttons. So the left button will start the scanning, and the right button will... Oh, can you see that? Sorry, it's right down below. That's, can everyone see that? Okay. You probably can't quite see what's going on. There's a good thing. So if I press the left button, so it started scanning a whole row at a time, it's just one way. And then... Red blue eye grab, and what it's done, I just want to actually be clear, it's had a look around and seen what's there, it's created a menu item for Dasher, for Viacam, it's looked at the desktop basically and picked up the various options. So if I start scanning again, this will be a safe one to edit. Left, now it scans left and right, I go for it, and start scanning again. Stop, click open. Oh, there you are, and GA has come up. So if you like, this grid is acting as an overlay between the user interface and the switch, and it means that somebody who's got very limited gestures can interact with the computer, but boy, is it slow and you know, hard work. So, how am I doing my time, for time, by the way? I've got a bit lost.
You've got 20 past.
Right, okay, good. I'm going to start the time ending. Oops. Take a second. That's the scan. I could do it like this. Okay. So I'll have to get out of it by going. Oop. There we go. Let me see the quick, eh? Oh. Right, so scan down the bottom row across quick. That disappeared, isn't it? Something's not quite. I'll use the key. Right. Sorry about this. I'm just not a GOC user. The trouble with GOC is it got very old and creaky. Hey, that's it, gone. We'll get rid of that for now. Okay, so back to presentation. Oops. Okay. So now, that's the desktop, and I just want to show you something quickly for videos, because access to media as well is an issue. Now, I'm going to show you a video. I'm just going to show you a quick clip and stop it.
We all use technology every day.
A person at a library computer. A person using a mobile phone. A person buying a train ticket.
And we're using it to do...
Right. Okay. Hopefully you saw that. Did you notice anything about it? Yeah? So there's a couple of things going on there. Can I play it again?
We all use technology every day.
A person at a library computer.
Describe
a person using a mobile phone. A person buying a train ticket.
And we're using it to do more...
Okay. So... If I play it again and turn off the sound, which would be the case if you're deaf or if you're in a noisy environment, that's the sound turned off. Hopefully you can still make some sense of what's going on. Okay. Or, so if you turn the sound back on.
Every day.
A person at a library computer. A person using a mobile.
We all use technology every day.
A
person at a library computer. A person using a mobile phone. A person buying a train ticket.
Okay. So the point is, when you couldn't see it, there was something going on describing to you. There's two technologies there. Closed captions with the text at the bottom, which is designed for people who are deaf. The subtitles of closed captions are the same here. In America, they actually are slightly different. And there's audio description, which is for someone who's blind, when you couldn't see it, or when you're in a very bright sunlight, which is telling you what was going on the screen. And there's actually a very interesting Mozilla Open project called Universal Subtitles, which is sort of crowdsourced. The idea is you go to a YouTube video and you add these accessibility features to it. Right, moving on to open accessibility now then. So that's giving you a flavour of accessibility then and the options that there are. Now, as I say, what interests me is open accessibility, and why I'm interested in that is because of what open development potentially brings to users of assistive technology. We were talking about freedom and equity and cost before, or people spoke about it yesterday, and that's all a big part of it. But something that really interests me, I think, is the possibility of users being involved in getting the innovations that they want. With open development, you can get users. Now, there's obviously, traditionally, there's a whole debate, isn't there, around whether it is just suitable for non-technical people to be involved, but it certainly can happen. The other thing is speed and cost of development. There's an awful number of what are called communication devices. I showed you that on-screen keyboard. There's devices which are basically an over electronics with an on-screen keyboard, and you can press buttons and it talks to you, or helps you communicate with someone else. There's loads of those, hundreds of them. They've all developed them from scratch, but if there was a common shared library that people use, then that development would happen quickly, and an innovation further up could happen. There's also a need for infrastructure and standards to allow this universal access to appear everywhere. And finally, as mentioned in the introduction, I'm involved with GNOME and Mozilla, and what interests me is both of those communities are acting as a hub for accessibility activity. GNOME on the desktop introduced a lot of the technology which other people are interested in, and Mozilla have been doing it for the web as well, and the two obviously need to go together. Now, I'm going to get techie now, I'm afraid, so those who aren't that technical, you might want to nod off for a second, but there's something very important called the accessibility API. So an API is just a mechanism whereby two bits of software can talk to each other in a known way, with a contract, if you like. The accessibility API is a way that some external software can look at the user interface, and it does a number of things. It allows it to explore the interface and see what buttons and menus and things are around, what state it's in, what the user's doing at the moment, has the user pressed a button, get a notification of it, and also to do the reverse, to actually control the user interface. This is vital for something like a screen reader, because you may not have noticed it, but when I was tabbing around, when I moved to different buttons, the screen reader was getting told that, one, the focus had moved to another button, and also could go and look at the buttons to see what they were, find out what text to speak to the user. So this is a critical component for assistive technology. It's also, it happens to be absolutely brilliant for testing. Testing user interfaces is something that's really difficult to do. Because they're very fragile, they change very often, it is part of the problem. You can do regression testing to make sure that, you know, a button hasn't been removed or a menu item hasn't been removed. You can create some automated tests. And there's a couple of projects, Linux Desktop Testing Project and Dogtail, which are quite well-known ones. Both of them use the assistive technology APIs to actually test the programs. In terms of open APIs, accessibility APIs, the GNOME Linux one, ATSPI, historically, was probably one of the better ones. It had the richest feature set, allowed assistive technologies to find out the most. It was ported to Windows to give the same sort of features, because at the time there was the thing on Windows called MSSA was very, very primitive. It wouldn't let you do much at all. Windows has since brought out something called UI automation. Interestingly, this is an open standard that I'm accessible to, spelled the right way, and it's actually managed by the Linux Foundation. So it's quite interesting that it's a Windows standard managed by the Linux Foundation. And also on Android there is one, but it's very, very limited at the moment. Just to give you a little diagram then of the sort of stack of technology, there's the platform at the bottom, and then the operating system. And to get to the user will either interact back through some accessibility options provided by the desktop services. Or if they're using assistive technology, it has to go through this API layer. Now, one of the important parts of this is the UI toolkit, which is built-in technology provided by the, in GNOME terms, I don't know if any GNOME developers, it's GTK. And that provides services for application developers to put the various widgets and controls in, and also provides accessibility. So I'm just going to quickly show you what it looks like. Get over that. So there's a little program called Accessizer, which allows you to explore the user interface as seen through this API. Now it's a slightly different view. I'll get down here. So what I'm going to do is just close it off. Just so we've got something to look at, I'm going to run gedit because it's a nice simple program. And you notice it's got some menus. As you know, there's file, and in file, there's open. So now if I I had this all sorted out in one dinner. Now we run Accessizer. Basically, it just displays everything, so it's just a hierarchy. Now, if we look here on the left, it's showing you all the applications it knows about. So down here, there's gedit. I can do various things like explore what's in the interface. So I'm going to look. Let's say I want to look at the application interface. The wrong place. I want to actually look at the interface. Now, this gedit object, or the application, exposes now let's go down a bit. Exposes various things that you can do. Oh, sorry about this, it's shrunk so much. Okay. Now I can drill down. So gedit has in it an object which isn't of any interest. But the one I want to get to show you is there's the file menu, okay, and there's the file submenu. And you can see before it's flashing up red just to indicate where you are. But what I wanted to show you is, so this allows a developer to look around the application and explore it. So it's really a techie tool. But one thing you can do, which is a bit of fun, if you look in the file menu, for those not visible on the screen at the moment, I can still explore it. And there's an item there called new. Now, the new thing has an action on it called click. And if I perform it, and what's going to happen now is this program here is remote controlling gedit and will bring up the menu. He says, okay. Sorry, it was. Oh, I'm doing new, so it's supposed to be opening. Yes, you're quite right, thank you. Opening, that was. There you go, so it's brought out the open menu. Thanks. So that's a geeky tool, I just wanted to show you that. Right. Finally then, web. Now, there's a lot of activity with web accessibility, which is good. There's a lot of noise about it at the moment, and I haven't touched on that, and that's quite deliberately, but we need to just cover it a little bit. One of the important points is that W3C's activities and standards have always been accessible, have always been inclusive. Think of it at the basic, originally it was up to you, the user agent, to decide how to render the information the best way for the user. But because the browsers need to understand implement those standards properly, and also web developers obviously need to use the standards in sensible ways. But the web browser has quite a hard job, which is why Mozilla's work has been important, in that they've got to not only implement the web standards, but also the platform standards like the APIs. But one thing that looks very interesting at the moment is web apps or web widgets. Even Windows 8 looks like it's going to be webby. So it looks like these are the technologies to look at, and we're in Open Directory, we're quite interested in them. One of the advantages of them is they deliver a widget you can run on a mobile phone, you can run it on a desktop in a container. So, and they're a chunk of user interface. So they're good in terms that they're a reusable component, and they can encapsulate good practice. So someone creates a really good, accessible, usable widget for logging, say, well, that's a very simple solution, then that can be reused by developers. And there's a project we're involved with called Raven Contact. Just to show you complexity, if you introduce all of a sudden inserted the web layer into this stack between the user and the platform, and suddenly you've got these different APIs. You've got user interface toolkits, which are useful, and I'll come back to them in a second. They've also got platform APIs, which are coming off now, becoming available with the mobile space, so that you can access the camera or the geolocation. And the advantage of the widgets is that they can encapsulate all of this technology and best practice. If you are a developer, just a few hints. Put the users at the centre of your design, that's quite important, and testing. Make sure you test with a wide range of users, including people with disabilities. And don't make assumptions about the user interface. It's so easy to assume when you're writing, say a web page, because it's simpler, that you just have an on-click handler. But if someone's tapping with a keyboard, it's not going to work. So it's very easy to make assumptions like that. Use the best practice, in particular in the mobile space now, progressive enhancement, responsive design are becoming the buzzwords, but they actually bring in accessibility best practice as well. And use toolkits. And the point is, if you roll your own widgets, whether it's on the desktop or in the web, then you've got to do all the accessibility work. If you use a stock widget provided by GTK or provided by jQuery Mobile or Dojo or something, then that hopefully has had all that work done on it, and it will work. And also ask the community, because they usually are very friendly. Just to let you know, then, because I've finished now. We've got an event coming up at the end, at the beginning of September. I'm very pleased we've got three accessibility talks in that. We've got Mark Aziz, who's the Mozilla accessibility guy. He's coming on to talk to us about working in a larger ecosystem, how that works. And Neil Williams and Toby Churchill, who make devices for blind people, little communications devices. And Julian Harty, who's from eBay, is working on mobile stuff. One of the things he did was create a little Daisy reader for Android, which is great. And we decided we'd get together. And this little device here is an Arduino. Someone was asking what a shield is. Shield's the built board on top. So it's a standard Arduino, and it's got a Bluetooth board on top. The point is, you can plug in a switch like this, and when you click the switch, it talks over Bluetooth to an Android phone. Everyone wants to see, I'll show you this. An Android phone has got a special on-screen keyboard, which you saw that scanning, it will do that, and in response to you pressing the switch, just as I was pressing the switches here. So that allows somebody who's physically disabled, or say in a wheelchair, to actually control Android applications without using the touch screen. And I think Julian's going to be talking about that. That video that I showed you, I think at that time I'll just finish off with that. There's an now we're becoming mobile and the web's becoming everywhere, and there's this need to make sure that accessibility isn't everything, otherwise it would just be one or two things. And this project, GPII, the Global Public Inclusive Infrastructure, is built on open source, and the idea is to build an infrastructure which allows this personalization information, if you want to call it that, to be carried around from device to device.
We all use technology every day.
A person at a library computer, a person using a mobile phone, a person buying a train ticket.
And we're using it to do more things all the time.
Library card catalog becomes a computer.
Some of the things we used to do face to face, we now do with automated systems.
Ticket booth becomes a ticket machine.
For most of us, those systems are okay most of the time. And when there are problems, we can find a way to get along.
Glare on ticket machine screen and shields the screen so it can be read.
But those of us with disabilities often run into situations where the technology doesn't work well enough to meet our abilities.
Person with low vision sees a blurry ticket machine screen.
In some cases, we can use assistive technology to bridge the gap. Assistive technology, or AT, can provide text for speech,
video chat with captions,
turn text into speech,
the weather today will be mostly sunny,
or make words on a screen easier to read,
computer login screen in high contrast,
whatever the user needs to accomplish a task. Unfortunately, we don't all have the assistive technology we need, and we can't always take it with us to use anywhere we want. Imagine if you could pick up any device, anywhere, and it would automatically adapt to you.
Person picks up device and it changes size.
Imagine someone who is usually confused by technology. Now every computer looks like their personal device. Simple, with just the controls and features they need.
Complicated computer screen changes to a simple version.
Imagine a student who has to use computers in different labs and classrooms. If all of them worked exactly as needed.
Student in two classrooms, each computer becomes accessible as she needs it.
There's a way to offer accessibility solutions to more people in more situations. We call it the Global Public Inclusive Infrastructure, or GPII. The GPII will use the cloud, the electronic networks that power most of our information services, and the intelligence and electronic products themselves.
Cloud with server symbols and dotted lines show information flow.
Right now, we use the cloud to store information, transmit it to the right destination, and convert it from one form into another.
Information moves into, around, and back out of the cloud to various devices.
The GPII will take the same cloud idea and use it to support accessibility. Users will start with a wizard that helps them choose how they want their personalized interface to look and work.
Person at computer making selections.
And store that profile in the cloud so that it's available from then on.
Profile information flows into the cloud.
Accessibility developers will create tools for the toolbox that address those needs.
Accessibility software flows into the cloud.
The GPII will store information about devices, their uses and features.
Device information flows into the cloud.
Then, when a user needs an accessibility feature, the GPII will take the right user profile and features, check the device, and guide the device in using its own features to meet the user's needs.
Accessibility information flows from the cloud to the phone and screen changes to large print.
The GPII will automatically apply the right tool to whatever device the person is using, wherever it is.
Hang on, it sounds simple, doesn't it? But there's some huge technical problems there. And if it's a big ask, if it's successful, I think it'd be a real game changer. It's some of the concepts have been rolling around for a long time now, but there's a European project being funded to implement some of the components in that. I'm going to stop there. Are there any questions at all? Yeah, Adam.
Steve, one question. When you were showing the various tools on Ubuntu, for example, is there not a better way to do this, which would be actually to produce a distro for people with blind visibility issues and a distro for people with motor?
Rather than
trying to put everything into the same package.
There's a number of issues. What most people, when we talk about the people with disabilities, that they don't necessarily want to use a special tool. They want to use the same thing that all their mates and friends are using. So on the desktop, they want to use Ubuntu, or they want their mobile phone. They don't want a clunky. You know, remember those blue three-wheel vehicles that used to go around? We used to go and move things at school. Right? But so that's one issue. Another issue is that these programs have been developed anyway, so they might as well be in there. There is one issue that's been contentious for a long time, is that APIs that I talked about, you need to turn them on, and it can have a speed impact on everything that's going on. So by default, that is off, and that's been argued a long time, but it's better to have it on because it gets tested more by everybody who tests and develops it. And I don't think the performance is a problem now. Another issue is that people need... Some people want non-assisted setup. So there are people who want to be able to install and run Ubuntu from scratch and with no vision. And I don't know what the state of it is now, it got very close to being possible because it means getting you need to get right back to the startup stuff and make sure it's all accessible. However, having said that, there is a guy, Tony Seale, who's created FreeiLinux, which is a distro specifically for people who have visual impairments. So, I mean, horses for courses, really, but there's a lot to be said for having the stuff in there for anyone to use. Potentially, they could be useful for other things, like that head tracker thing could be useful in some, I can't think of a good example at the moment, but you never know. But that's a good question, though. All right? Yeah, oh, right,
So what do you know about the state of voice control systems in GNU Linux?
Not much at all, I'm afraid. Voice is an issue. The control, I don't know at all. The text entry, which is, if you like, a simpler problem in some ways. There's a number of... There's something with Simon Listens.
As far as I can find, there aren't any finished tools that are only frameworks and systems. Yeah. I mean, I played with Simon and CMU Sphinx as well, from UNIB Mellon. Gone through the mess of importing voice calls.
Yeah, so it's very important.
Actually, just hit it, use it.
It's been a known weakness for ages. And the trouble with Simon Listens is to get the actual speech recognition bit, it's licensed in such a cruddy way that they can't redistribute it. So you as a user have to go to their website, download it, install it as a separate component, which is a real pain. So I can't give any good news. So there's one funny.
Do we have any eye tracking based software? Because obviously, at the moment, that would dash it.
Yes. I haven't put one on here. I think there's a version of Dash. I was going to have a quick look at that. I don't know. It's a hard problem, harder than the head tracking one. I'll find out for you. I was wondering that. The commercial systems, if you look at them, for people with disabilities, there's something called Mytobi, which is a big one, and that was initially developed for marketing, so looking at where people, when they see a website, where do they look, you track their eyes and work out where the hotspots are. And that has an, and that then, they thought, oh, this would be useful for people with physical disabilities who can't use a mouse or keyboard. But the prices are something like 14k for this PC, basically, with a, which is effectively like a Kinect on the bottom of it, so, but infrared. But there is the open... OpenCV. There's a library, there's a really good open source project which the Viacam is based on, which is all the visual image manipulation and tracking. And there are various projects, if you look around, that they've done things like you can recognize icons that they've put up. So people can control the computer by holding a yellow circle or a red square as a gesture, if you like.
I was going to say, as a follow-up point to your point, I saw a project by, I don't know if it was a year or two ago, by Graffiti Research Laboratories, using OpenCV called iWriter. They wrote it specifically for a friend of theirs who had locked-in syndrome, and they built a whole apparatus as an infrared adapted webcam.
Was that the glasses one?
Yeah.
For the graffiti artist?
Yeah. As far as I know, it used OpenCV, so it could be pretty easily adapted to use an on-screen keyboard.
That's a really good project, wasn't it? And I would say a lot of projects, a lot of good accessibility solutions work like that. They're something for someone specific with a specific issue, but then they become more generally useful.
I was also wondering, Asserizer, the way it was able to look inside running apps and get access to all that, what is that underneath and can we get?
Yeah, that is the accessibility API, which is exposing that information. Now, what has happened is all of the inbuilt controls, like buttons and menus, and the tree objects in GTK, they expose that. They've been written so that they expose that information through that API. And this is one of the issues. If you created your own ones, it doesn't work. If you want to play around a bit, look for PyATSBI. Is a Python library, which makes it really easy to use. So it's PyATSBI. And also have a look at Dogtail and LDDP, because I think they're both Python and they both use that. But there are various mechanisms into it. Like GOP uses a really antique way, C-based, which is one of the problems with it, is now depreciated. Okay, any more questions? Thank you very much. If you have any questions or are interested in any aspects, do please ask them. Okay. Thank you.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.